The Guardian.
In practical terms, NATO is offering close cooperation with the Georgian government and the Georgian military. That means helping the Georgians build up their own capacity, because this is a decision for the Georgians. It means ensuring proper interoperability with NATO. It means proper joint training. And it also means ensuring that the structures of cooperation, first of all through the NATO-Georgia Commission, are properly geared towards eventual membership. So this is a route map to membership, membership that was first of all agreed in April.
But is this going to end up accelerating Georgia's entry into NATO, do you think?
It's difficult to talk about acceleration when one is starting something. And the commitment at the Bucharest summit in April was to membership. Now, for the first time, there is a process that will take that forward. NATO foreign ministers are going to return to this issue in December. But in advance of that, the Georgian drive to build up their own capacity, to reform their own institutions, to develop the sort of political structures that support eventual membership of NATO are there. I think that's important.
What are the chances that this will kick off, the formal process will kick off in December?
I think the formal process kicked off yesterday with the establishment of a NATO-Georgia Commission. And we have taken seriously the commitments that heads of government made in April. We're now going to build on them on the ground. The Georgians want to be part of that. I think that's an important signal, but there's also important substance to it.
But isn't the problem that in the NATO Charter, you can't get into NATO if you have an ongoing dispute like Abkhazia, like South Ossetia? Isn't that going to block Georgia for the foreseeable future?
I think the important thing is that always we combine the political and the practical, the political support for Georgia, but also the political implementation of the ceasefire agreement, which involves two key aspects for the international community. First of all, international monitors to make sure that the ceasefire is being properly addressed and implemented. Secondly, international engagement on long-term settlement of these disputed territories.
What if Russia refuses to budge? What does the international community, what does NATO do then?
Well, Russia has said it will budge. Russia has said from the president of Russia that it will withdraw its troops to the August 7th boundaries. He's promised that three times now. It's a very significant thing for the president of any country to make a commitment. It's even more significant if then the country does not follow up on the commitment. And I said yesterday that the word of the president of Russia needs to be his bond. He said that the withdrawal will be completed by 22nd, 23rd of August. It's Russia's commitment to follow that through. And the Russian foreign minister wrote last week that there are no winners from this crisis. And the longer Russia fails to fulfill its commitments, the less of a winner it is.
Can you envisage if this goes on much longer, this having an impact, for example, on Russia's holding the Winter Olympics? And
I don't think people are thinking about 2014 at the moment. They're thinking about 2008. And there are immediate issues here. I'll be meeting some of the refugees who've been displaced by Russian soldiers. There's a humanitarian crisis in this country, as well as a political crisis of an occupying force from a neighboring country. So that is the immediate focus. I think that Russia wants respect, but it won't get respect if it doesn't offer respect to its neighbours. And that is a key aspect for the debate that is no doubt happening within Russia, as well as the debate that needs to happen between Russia and the international community.
Isn't there a problem here in the nature of the ceasefire agreement that was brokered by the French? It's got some very loose language in it, like additional security measures. Doesn't that give wiggle room for the Russians to say, this is what we're doing, additional security measures?
Well, I think there's always a danger of wiggle room in agreements, but I think the spirit and the letter of the agreement needs to be followed through. I actually think it's in Russia's interest to fulfil its agreements. It's not in Russia's interest to be seen as a country that signs up to something one day and then doesn't follow it through the next week. And the Russians sometimes have a reputation of being sticklers for the letter of international agreements, and certainly they like to say that they are. And I think it's very important that in this case, the details of what they signed up to are followed through. And there cannot be change, redrawing of boundaries on the basis of force. It's got to be on the basis of international law.
Isn't there a problem, too, about for NATO to make a stand, for Britain to make a stand over this issue, that Georgia, President Saakashvili, had a role in kicking this off by moving into South Ossetia?
I think that it's not quite right to talk about, quote-unquote, moving into South Ossetia. Remember, the Georgians were co-peacekeepers with the Russians and with the South Ossetians, but clearly there was a tit-for-tat between the South Ossetians and the Georgians that then escalated. And I said, in the presence of the Georgian president yesterday, and he agreed that any of the allegations about misdemeanors or crimes by any side need to be independently investigated. The Human Rights Watch are here, Amnesty International are here, the International Crisis Group are publishing a report later this week. Without fear or favor, we will follow up those independent, authenticated reports of misdemeanors or wrongdoing.
If NATO is talking about Georgia acceding at some point, doesn't this war illustrate those problems? I mean, the idea behind NATO is collective defence, and attack on one is attack on all. Would we be intervening now on Georgia's side against Russia if Georgia was already a NATO member?
Well, people ask these questions for those countries that entered NATO in the 1990s. I sat round the NATO table in Brussels yesterday with Lithuania, with Latvia, with Estonia. 10 years ago, people were saying, how could these countries be members of NATO? And I think two things are important. First, and absolutely foundational, they are independent countries. They're not ex-Soviet Union. They are independent, sovereign countries with democratic governments who have every right to make their own decisions on the basis of their own popular will. Second, as they are institutionalized as part of NATO, they become part of, they strengthen themselves, and they hold greater legitimacy with their own people. They have a stronger sense of their own self-confidence. They build up their own capacity. So this is a process. And I think it's right to see Georgian and Ukrainian membership as part of a process as well. And it's a part of a process of building up these countries as a permanent fixture of the international landscape, not just as an accident.
But isn't Russia entitled to feel, in that case, encircled as the NATO accession of these countries goes on?
This is a really important point, because these countries are no threat to Russia. No one in Lithuania or Latvia or Georgia is saying that they want to attack Russia. So the notion of encirclement is premised on the idea that there's some kind of threat. Russia is not threatened by peaceful, democratic, independent, prosperous countries on its borders. And I think that it was George Kennan who, first of all, wrote in the 1950s. George Kennan was the author of the famous 1948 Moscow Telegram that authored the doctrine of containment. He talked about the Russians always seeing their neighbours either as vassals or enemies. Now, the truth about the independent countries of bordering Russia is that they shouldn't be vassals, but they don't need to be enemies. And it's important that the Russians understand that.
We are making a stand on the issue of territorial integrity of Georgia. Russians are saying, well, territorial integrity wasn't the principal concern when it came to Kosovo. Did the West make an exception for Kosovo that's not prepared to make for Abkhazia and South Ossetia?
Well, I'm afraid I totally reject the comparison of the collapse of the former Yugoslavia. 750,000 people or more driven from their homes. The largest mass slaughter in European history since the Second World War. And, critically, a United Nations status process from 1999. I totally reject the comparison of that situation in Kosovo with what's happening here in South Ossetia, where the comparison breaks down on almost every ground. And I think that the Russians themselves, in April, signed up to the latest of a series of over a dozen UN Security Council resolutions authorizing a UN force in Abkhazia, but also committing to the territorial integrity of Georgia. And so territorial integrity is important for every country. And it's important that it's respected. And I'm surprised if the Russians turn their backs on that principle. And there will be even more surprise around the world if the Russians no longer stick to that principle.
Well, finally, are we a bit late coming out as Britain? The French were here, the Germans are here, the leader of the opposition were here. There's been criticism that the British government has been late to come out and make this symbolic appearance in Tbilisi.
I don't accept any suggestion of British lateness. First, the President of Georgia said yesterday publicly that the statements by the Prime Minister and by me as Foreign Secretary had set the standard, set the benchmark for European and international support for Georgia. So take his word about the strength of the British government's engagement. Secondly, in every international forum that we are part of, the UN, the EU, NATO, the UK, through the Prime Minister and myself, have been playing a leading role. Thirdly, I spoke to Condi Rice last week about the importance of visible support in Georgia, and we agreed that she would come here before the NATO meeting and I would come here after the NATO meeting. There's no race to Tbilisi. I welcome David Cameron's visit here. He said he supported what the government had been doing. Perfectly legitimate for him to come here. But what's important is that we are effective as a British government in the international diplomacy that we are pursuing. And I think that the engagement that we've had from the Prime Minister down, now me being here, the follow-through that we're having, means that Britain's playing its full role in this crisis.
For more discussion and analysis, download Guardian Daily. That's The Guardian's news podcast, available first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.